Our next case for argument is the Flight Attendants Committee against the Teamsters Union. Mr. Bartos.
May it please the Court. The District Court fundamentally misunderstood and misapplied the McCaskill Bond statute, both in its terms and as applied to this case, and the order below should be reversed. I want to get directly to the first of its errors, which had to do with the provision of the statute that deals with the term covered transaction. And the District Court's particular concern was whether or not, in this case, there was a combination of multiple air carriers to form a single air carrier, which is are the words used in the statute. But rather than address those words in light of the facts of the case, the lower court held that the analysis is informed by the policy and practice of the Civil Aeronautics Board that it applied when it existed and when it was making decisions as to whether to adopt or impose labor protective provisions. That approach to the statute was fundamentally wrong and calls for reversal. The statute's specific terms obviously control, and none of the approach that the district court applied relied on those terms. And it's telling to compare the two different decisions.
So let's go to the statute. The critical term in the statute, as I see it, is air carrier. And an air carrier is an entity that holds a certificate issued by the CAB. So what do we know in the record about whether at the time of the merger, Midwest held a certificate issued by the CAB?
Well, not the certificate, as I understand, was issued by the DOT. The record, the evidence shows that Midwest was an operating air carrier that flew as an independent airline prior to its acquisition.
Asking what the record shows about whether it had a certificate.
The record shows that it had a certificate because, among other things, the record shows that the certificate was relinquished following the acquisition. I can't point offhand, Your Honor, to the specific.
So it still had its certificate when it was acquired, even though it was rather depleted.
Right. There was essentially a two-part process of what happened. There was an agreement and plan of merger that resulted in the acquisition of Midwest and its holding company by the holding company of Republic. Midwest then, from the period of July of through November of 2009, continued its operations as a carrier under its own certificate. During that time, it was leasing various aircraft from Boeing. Now, the number, total number, I think, was nine, and Boeing was reclaiming those aircraft one or two at a time until we got to November when the last one went away.
Every time any of these airplanes visited Washington State, it never left again.
It may well have been to that effect. As those planes came out of service, Republic, the other portion of the acquiring entity, was adding flights as a transition from the Midwest operation to the Republic operation, using for the Midwest flying the same Midwest ground crews, the same gates, slots, and all the apparatus of an airline route system was being transferred to Republic. And by the end of the day, when Midwest relinquished its certificate, stopped flying as an independent carrier, the operation has been.
Following up on Judge Easterbrook's question, is there some identifiable moment when the process of acquisition was complete and Midwest was now owned by the owner of Republic.
Well, the acquisition was complete in July of 2009 when the merger, plan of merger and agreement for the acquisition of Midwest became effective.
Well, an agreement to merge is not
right.
the same.
No, that was the effective date.
I assume you're referring to the closing of the merger and
right.
not
that
to the agreement.
I'm referring to the date it became effective. The closing.
So it became effective in July 2009?
That's correct.
And at that point, Midwest was still flying?
Correct. Midwest continued immediately following the acquisition. What the merger did was merge Midwest into a subsidiary of Republic, the merger subsidiary. Midwest, the new Midwest, the product of the merger, continued flying, and eventually using Midwest, the flight attendants from the former Midwest. And as Midwest
But it was bankrupt when it was acquired, wasn't it?
It was not in bankruptcy, no, Your Honor.
But it was broke.
It was having severe financial difficulties,
really,
just like
behind
just,
the ball.
Well,
I mean,
just like every...
It couldn't pay Boeing for the airplanes, which is why it was losing them.
Right. Correct, but that in the context of the dispute here, any number of the cases involving labor protections, and in fact, the TWA American case involved a carrier that was acquired because it was losing money hand over fist. Right. If you look at Allegheny Mohawk, the decision of the CAB talks inextensively about how Mohawk is financially not viable, that the financial condition of the acquired entity...
Mohawk was not viable as a corporation long before it was financially not viable. Those of us who have actually been on Mohawk flights, was known, by the way, as Slowhawk most of the time it operated.
There may have been a connection.
It's just a matter of time.
But the district court and the Teamsters in this case make a great deal out of the financial condition of Midwest,
so
and that's
at
irrelevant.
At what point would you acknowledge that we're no longer talking about a consolidation of air carriers? If Republic just bought airplanes, that would not be a... I mean, suppose Midwest didn't have to give its airplanes back to Boeing. Mm-hmm. Suppose, you know, it had these, 25 planes? So suppose Midwest went to Republic and said, we're going out of business and we'd like to sell you our planes. And Republic buys them. Then would there be any obligations to Midwest's flight attendants?
Well, I guess the statutory obligations involve multiple various elements that go into them. One is the acquisition of 50% or more of the equity securities or assets by value of one of the entities. So it would depend.
Well, suppose Midwest, that's all it has. It has these it has these planes that are worth something. It stopped flying. Maybe it still hasn't turned its certificate yet, but stopped flying. It's got its 25 planes. Republic comes along, buys the 25 planes. Mm-hmm. Do they then have an obligation to the flight attendants?
The obligation only comes in, Your Honor, when there is also...
Well, you tell me yes or no, and then you explain your answer.
Well, it may be that he can't tell you without knowing the value, since the statute says 50% or more by value of the assets of the air carrier.
I was going to assume the value.
It's 100%.
Right, and I was going to answer assuming that question, but I wanted to point out the statute talks both about there's several different things going on. There's the acquisition of 50% or more of the assets.
Look, in my example, all this airline has stopped flying.
Mm-hmm.
But it has these assets.
Okay. Then I
five airplanes. Republic buys them. It's a simple question.
Then I think in that scenario, as I understand, there's no employees because they're not flying. But
they may still have employees, right?
Well,
employees sitting around, you know, who knows? Does that make a difference?
Most likely we'll have employees on layoff.
If they're the facts you're describing, if the acquired assets I think the answer is
what
no.
If
I think
Midwest, what if Midwest had said to its employees, look, we're broke, we're not flying anymore. But we'll employ you, but we'll furlough you without pay, and then maybe that'll help you get a future job in the airline industry, something like that. Would that be enough to trigger, you know, Republic's obligation?
So before the acquisition occurs, any acquisition occurs, the airline is defunct. And all it has is planes. And it sells all the planes to the new entity. Does not appear to me, standing alone, to be covered by the statute. But that's clearly not what happened here.
When the deal closed, was still flying?
Midwest was flying, and the operations of Midwest were merged into, as the Teamster said, absorbed by Republic. The evidence is ample that the operations, there was an operational airline. Even if they were in bad financial shape, there's an operational airline that was then, those operations were merged into, personnel were transferred, assets were transferred, the operations continued. In this case, it's not critical, but under the same name. And that's what happened here. This was not the purchase of a dead asset somewhere. This is the purchase of an operating airline.
When the deal closed, Midwest's operating certificate did not allow it to operate the aircraft for which Republic held the certificate. And Republic's operating certificate did not allow it to operate the Boeing 717s leased by Midwest. Is that right?
That is correct. And the 717s were returned to Boeing, and the flying over those routes was taken over using the Republic aircraft, the Embraers, and the Republic flight personnel, but the same Midwest ground crews. When the plane lands, there's people on the ground, there's contracts with the airlines, there's gates, there's slots, there's ticket agents. Those were all from Midwest taken over to Republic. And that is, in the end, that transaction as it occurred was the combination of the two air carriers into a single air carrier, the surviving air carrier, Republic. And at the end of the day, the flight attendants, the only group who were left on the outside, although Republic says you have seniority, it just has to be resolved in an arbitration or with the Teamsters. The NMB says you are part of the same craft and class as the Republic flight attendants. The crafts and classes have been combined. And the only thing that's stopping this from going forward is the Teamsters refusing to participate in a process that we believe is mandated by the statute. And if I'm reading the lights correctly, that's the end of my time, and I will reserve the rest for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Barthos. Ms. Robbins.
Good morning, Your Honors. Marianne Robbins, representing the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, its airline division, and Local 135. I also would like to start out with the express language of the statute, and specifically the statute providing that there must be a transaction for the combination of multiple carriers into one single air carrier. And as the court noted...
Please do not touch the microphone.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, so let's start there. Was Midwest an air carrier on the date the merger closed?
On the date the merger closed,
yes,
Midwest Airlines, as opposed to its holding company, was a carrier on the day the transaction closed.
Okay, well, that's part one of the definition of covered transaction. Rather, that's part A.
No, it is not, Your Honor.
Part B. Look, I'm reading from the statute. It is Part A. Don't argue with me. Part B then says it involves the transfer of ownership or control of 50% or more of the equity securities or 50% or more by value of the assets. Well, was that part met?
Your Honor, the first part was not met because the transaction was between holding companies, not between airlines. The holding companies do not hold DOT certificates, and therefore they are not the carriers. The carriers are subsidiaries.
Then the statute would be very easily defeated just by forming a holding company and transferring your airline to the holding company and merging the holding.
Your Honor, I agree with that.
The statute doesn't say transaction of two air carriers. It says transaction involving two or more covered air carriers.
That's right.
Acquiring a subsidiary by acquiring the parent is a transaction involving the subsidiary. That's not even debatable.
I think, Your Honor, though, then you have to go to a second stage, which is, did the subsidiary air carriers, in fact, become in the transaction one single air carrier. That's still part of Part A. And the problem here was that those two air carriers...
That a physical question? What happened? What? They didn't become one. They became... What did they become?
One air carrier ceased to exist.
Well, that's often
the two air carriers did not combine.
Yeah, well, that's what happened with TWA, right?
Counsel, just back your head up. You will have less trouble with the microphone. Every merger, just by definition, one of the corporations ceases to exist. Sometimes one would say both corporations cease to exist and a new entity is created. Are you arguing that this transaction applies only to the acquisition, that this statute applies only to the acquisition of equity securities and not to statutory mergers?
Your Honor, I'm saying that this statute requires the merger of certificate authority, that because we're talking about carriers as defined by this statute, what makes the merger is that two certificated air carriers combine to become a single air carrier. And in this case, one air carrier, that being Midwest Airlines, did not combine its DOT certificate with another air carrier. Instead, it ceased to exist, and an air carrier that was a standalone air carrier with its own DOT certificate and its own staff and its own...
Didn't TWA cease to exist when it was acquired by United?
DOT merged
by American?
In the American TWA situation. The TWA DOT certificates were transferred over to the surviving entity. We have put those documents...
Why does that make a difference?
Because McCaskill Bond talks about a transaction being a transaction of...
Now, in terms of the purpose of the statute, why would it matter whether a certificate was transferred or not transferred?
That's the way the statute is written, and what it is saying
why,
is...
Why does the statute talk about certificates being transferred?
This statute
in the definition of air carrier.
Air carrier is what gets you there, right? Statute talks about consolidations of air carriers. You go to the definition of an air carrier, and that's a thing holding a certificate.
That's right. And when it talks about combining them into a single air carrier...
But it had a certificate when they merged.
That's
no. When
Midwest, of course,
Midwest as a carrier never merged, it relinquished its certificate. In TWA and American, the certificates.
Counsel, I don't think you're accurately describing this transaction. The holding companies, Republic, and the holding company of Midwest merge. We now have a bunch of subsidiaries underneath. Midwest is the subsidiary, and it had a certificate at the time. The statutory question is whether the acquisition of a holding company involves the subsidiary, because statute says not transactions of air carriers, but transactions involving air carriers. So why is it that you believe that the acquisition of a parent corporation, of a holding corporation, does not, quote, involve the subsidiary?
I'm going to the words of the definition, which say that it's a covered transaction if the transaction for the combination of multiple air carriers into a single air carrier. That is what I'm relying on, Your Honor. That's part of A. And let me give you an example.
Well, there were two carriers before the merger, and afterwards there was one.
Well, Your Honor, I think will dramatize it. There is another subsidiary that was purchased, another holding company, actually, that was purchased, Frontier Airline. And Frontier Airline had a subsidiary that was an air carrier. Now, plaintiffs are not arguing that they should be merged, the Midwest flight attendants, with the Frontier flight attendants, even though if you go just by holding companies, that would be exactly what you would do. If Frontier's holding company was purchased by Republic, then that air carrier, Frontier air carrier, their flight attendants should be merged with the flight attendants from Midwest. But that's not what plaintiffs are arguing. So I don't think that they are even agreeing with what the court is saying, that just the merger of holding companies or the acquisition of holding companies is enough. In fact, I would note...
Is there some reason why you want to draw this fine distinction? It's not in the statute.
It is in the statute.
No, it is in the statute.
It's in the definition of what an air carrier
is. The
statute
doesn't say that if you hand in your certificate after you are acquired, there's no longer, the statute is inapplicable. Where does it say that?
In the definition of the air carrier.
No, it was an air carrier when it was acquired, and afterwards it ceased to be. Where does the statute say you have to remain an air carrier?
What the statute is saying is that you have to merge.
Where does it say that?
Where does it say?
What you're saying.
Well, I think it says it when...
Is there some purpose to your argument? I mean... Why would Congress want to make this distinction you're arguing for?
Congress would want to make this distinction because Congress realized that sometimes holding companies purchase subsidiaries and they stay separate. They stay as separate carriers. What I think Congress was dealing with is that where they don't stay separate and when the actual operations merge, the aircraft, the personnel, and the certificates merge, and the workforces have to be merged. And that's another part of this statute. This statute requires that not only there be a combination of air carriers, but it results in a combination of workforces, a combination of classes. So what the Congress's concern was what happened in TWA and American. You have two workforces. You have aircraft workforces certificates coming together into one enterprise, and what happened there was that there was no integration process. So Congress wasn't saying every time one holding company buys another, there's supposed to be seniority integration. What Congress was saying is when you're putting – excuse me.
So if American had just fired all the TWA employees, there would be no
American
violation of the statute.
American couldn't operate that way because American was growing as a result of TWA.
I'm asking a question in principle. Could they just fire all the TWA employees and then be outside the statute?
If they were operating the authority with the aircraft, no. If they could do it with their own authority and their own aircraft, then you really don't have the merger.
Well, what if they said, we like your planes, we'll take your planes, and we'll hire some non-union people to fly these planes? They could do that.
I think that's why they use the authority, Your Honor.
They use that
you have to show a merged authority, so that if you did something like what you just said, we want the authority, we want the planes, but not the people. I don't know how that would come out, but they used authority as a code word or as a concept that you had to have a full combination of the actual functioning air carrier. You had to have the certificates going together and the workforces going together, and in that situation there would be a merger. If you hired a bunch of non-union people, you probably would have grievances, but in addition, you'd still have a merger of workforces. So you'd still have the issue of integration. You just have a contract violation on top of it, Your Honor.
So is the key part of your argument that they didn't use any of Midwest's planes because they were taken back by Boeing?
They didn't use any Midwest authority, planes, or flight attendants, and actually their customer service was from Frontier.
After this transaction closed, they continued to use Midwest certificates. They used their planes and they used their flight attendants. That tampered off over time. I thought we had all agreed that Midwest was operating as an air carrier when this merger closed.
Yes. And what happened was it was a separate entity with its own authority, and instead of being merged into one enterprise, that disappeared. It relinquished its authority, returned its plane, and its employees were furloughed. There was no combination of workforces which would bring this into play.
And the certificate is critical to your argument, isn't it, that Republic certificates were never, Midwest certificates were never utilized by Republic.
And I think it's because it's in the definition. And by it being in the definition, what it's being clear is it's not the NMB single transportation system issue. That single transportation system finding can exist when you have separate certificates and separate seniority systems. But what it's saying is, no, when we are expecting McCaskill-Bond to apply, there actually has to be a merger of operations. The certificates have to become one. It's not the situation where you have these separate certificates and separate seniority systems, which can exist under an NMB single transportation system. It used different terminology and specific definitions to define
but
when this occurs.
But the day after the merger closed, Midwest was still flying and still had its certificate, right?
As a separate carrier, just like Frontier was a separate carrier owned by Republic. And no one, or plaintiffs certainly aren't claiming that they have seniority rights at Frontier. It was a separate entity at that point, and there was no merger of that entity with...
So what should Republic have done to... what might Republic have done that would have preserved the amendment?
To fall under the amendment?
Yeah.
To have maintained, transferred the certificates, had personnel that continued to be employed, and planes that continued to be employed that were, in fact, Midwest planes.
Okay, so suppose it did that for 2 weeks, and then it gave back Midwest's certificate and sold the airplanes.
If it gave back the certificate and sold the airplanes, then I don't see where the merger is. What you're talking about is a functioning combined airline.
There's a question whether these transactions become exceedingly uncertain because developments after the transaction render the amendment inapplicable. That's your argument. They could do things weeks, months later.
Well, Your Honor, I guess from my point of view...
Start the negotiations, decide they didn't like it, and discard the certificate.
Your Honor, I guess from my point of view, the carrier, the subsidiary that has the certificate, what I'm looking at is being the transaction. It's got to involve that combination. And that combination, in this case, didn't occur. In many situations, it does occur. You're using the workforce.
So in other words, you don't know whether the amendment is applicable until might be a long time after the merger.
It might be a long time after the holding companies merge. Just like with Frontier, you'd have to wait and see whether or not the carriers...
Wait and see for how long?
The carriers, in fact, merge.
Wait and see for how long? Years?
Well, that's where you would have the claims, Your Honor, and I think you'd have to see the other part of which we haven't really talked about is the fact that these provisions, McCaskill-Bond, the Section 3 only apply to the extent that your seniority is impacted by what is, in fact, the merger. So you have a question of not only was there a combination, but then was your seniority impacted by the fact that your company went defunct or is it being impacted by the fact that there was an acquisition? And as time goes by, that becomes more complicated.
Great. Okay, thanks for the complications.
Thank you, Ms. Robbins. Anything further, Mr. Barthos?
I would just like to touch on a few issues that just came up in the Teamsters argument. First, the argument has been made that the statute does not apply because there has been no combination of the workforces. And it's been said in different ways, but in essence, what it boils down to is that because the Teamsters have declined to allow for an integration of the seniority into their seniority list, the plaintiffs in this case have no standing under the statute. And that's wrong because obviously the National Mediation Board has decided we're all part of one crafter class. Republic has said expressly, you have an employment relationship with us, and the only thing that has to be resolved is your dispute with the Teamsters. And those matters are to be resolved if there's a dispute under Section 13 of Allegheny Mohawk in an arbitration. There were various arguments about aircraft and the fact that aircraft were not transferred and going back to the financial status of Midwest. Those are all arguments, and the district court adopted this position as well. But those are arguments that go to the merits of the arbitration. They're not arguments that go to whether the statute applies. It takes issues that are outside of the statute and is applying classic seniority integration factors. Those are arbitration issues. Those are not issues for the court under the statute. The final thing I would say is with respect to Frontier, the reason the Frontier is not in the picture is because with respect to flight attendants, the mediation board has held that Frontier is not a part of the single transportation system, and so therefore the second portion of the statute that requires a combination of crafts or class has not been satisfied. So Frontier is really neither here nor there in the present dispute. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.